It's a fly love song. To the effect of nothing, effective fronting is what I don't allow, so let me tell you something. I am a bona fide. Not too modest and not a lot of pride. Soon to have a ride and a home to reside. If my mama is sick, I'm by her bedside. Used to watch the show on Channel 4 called Riptide. Watch my wares inside because it's too damn cold outside. That's how the run-ins go. If there ain't no dough, then there ain't no show. So take your roly-poly fat promoter to the chemical bank and get my cash. If you want to see the people scream and laugh, your best question ask real fast. Because I don't want to see them start bucking, throwing chairs in the air while you be ducking. What? Don't step to me with that. If you promoting the show, make sure it ain't whack or else I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
The whack show.
Yo, man, what's up with
that? Don't sweat. What's up? Come on, 500. That was the deal.
All right, so, wow, 61.
No, I think it's like 63 maybe, 62, 63. I haven't saved it yet, you know?
So, well, either way, it's still a pretty grand accomplishment. I see you got some WWE cards here. Were these sent by one Cardboard Icons by any chance?
No. It was, I got them from my brother-in-law. And I don't know how he got them, but they're new. They're not old cards.
Yeah, well, I saw Del Rio in there.
Yeah, you got Del Rio in there and the Big Boss Man. And
it has that retro look to it, though.
Well, you didn't see the one. You didn't see my prized possession, dude.
What, the Shyster?
No, right there. money. Whoa.
Yay.
You did that for like one time. I think I spent the night at your house for like four or three nights straight, and you kept on going, whoa. Yay! Those are your boys, huh? Bushwhacker?
Yeah. You know, you can say whatever you want about how I felt about the Warrior early on.
But you never liked the
Bushwhacker. But don't ever put me in the Bushwhackers category.
I don't think your new gimmick's working, dude.
Which one?
Your dirty ashtray gimmick isn't working, man. It's the second time in a row you come in smoking it. The people, like, they don't want you to smoke no more, Dean. You know, they're worried.
It's fine.
I got a couple tweets from my 516 followers, yeah. You know, going like, hey, is this guy smoking again, you know?
Yeah,
and they're kind of
that's not really true.
They're kind of worried that I don't have 516 followers, or that they tweeted.
That anyone was concerned about it. That's fine. I kind of had this little.
I didn't think you were going to show tonight, dude. I thought you were going to be too distraught.
Oh yeah, well that does tie into the ashtray smell. I had like a little kind of good luck gimmick going. So I had been a weekend warrior for the last couple of weeks.
But, so you were doing it for the Niners. You were doing it for the
people. I did it for the Niners.
He did it.
I did it for the Super Bowl. But alas, to no avail.
No, nobody had a worse Sunday night than I did.
The beat got over on me, and that's it.
I mean, I had the worst Sunday night.
Patriots.
Because, I mean, coming in like Sunday morning, I was like, Patriots could win, Niners could win, I can watch the Super Bowl with a big smile on my face the whole time because I don't care who wins, and both of them lose. So, yeah, it was a...
Sad state of affairs.
No, I mean the Patriots. After I saw them play for like the first 2 minutes, I knew they weren't going to do nothing.
Yeah.
The Niners was tough. It was a good game though. You know, I mean, it was a good game. Calls, you know, a couple calls here and there, on both, you know, not on both sides. Calls on one side, but you know, that's the way it is, dude. You know, you gotta expect bad refs here and there.
Yeah. I'm not gonna blame the refs on that one. I mean, the worst call they made pretty much got made up for right on the next play.
Now, I thought the worst call they made was the ref and the kicker. And that, to me, that really changed the whole kind of dynamic of that game. Because, I mean, they're holding Marshawn the whole time, then Marshawn busts one off. And then it's funny how everybody, like, they're praising Russell Wilson, but they shut Russell Wilson down. And he got that one pass. He had that one pass, and pretty much that was the most dangerous pass they did. But it was funny how they always went to Marshawn. So they went to their bread and butter, and it worked. So more power to them.
Yeah, I mean, to tie it into wrestling, I mean, what would you think about Sherman's rant at the end? I mean, there was a little bit of
Twitter, CM Punk's tweet?
Punk and Austin Aries. I didn't think it was that great. I mean, it was reminiscent of, like, some dude just yelling. I mean...
Like Bruce Barbecue?
Yeah.
He didn't start off low. He didn't start off quiet.
Right. So, I mean, it have the feel of a wrestling rant in that you could tell that everything he said was contrived, and it was like I mean, he's gonna go and start making up that, like, Crabtree was saying stuff, or that Crabtree allegedly tried to fight him as he was recovering from an Achilles surgery in the offseason, which sounds like BS to me. But, so at least from that standpoint, yeah, he made up a reason to get mad, which is fine. But, I mean, I didn't think his content was great in terms of, like, heel promo. What do you think?
It wasn't a good heel promo. It was reminiscent, let's see, like, it reminded me of the infamous Magnum TA promo, where it wasn't the one where he got beat up in the back room, but he did something to the effect of, you, Ric Flair, and your brother, cousin, Ole Anderson, or whatever, are the lowest scum on the face of this earth. It's like that. So,
so it was Jumping Jeff Farmer-esque?
It had a little bit more talent than Jumping Jeff Farmer-esque, but there was no WWE creative. You know, there was no, like, build up to it. You know, it's kind of like WWE creative. They just, like, threw it out there. You're going, like, threw it out of left field, and
yeah,
you're going, like, what? What's going on, man? So, yeah. That's how it was.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you finally, you've turned over a new leaf. You finally got me on the whole Ric Flair promo that you did in McDonald's and made that little fat kid cry. So you finally turned that, flipped it on me.
I turned the tables on you, John. Turned the tables on you in a wrong way.
It was a wrong way. It's not even a bad way. It's the wrong way. This guy's saying over here that I made one of his, he's coaching. He's very proud of his, of the basketball team he's coaching, rightfully so. They're 6-0 in league, so good job on that. But he had me come in for some guest refereeing and stuff where I was playing. And
guest refereeing, had him come in to toughen up some of the soft kids out
which,
there.
Which
man.
I did.
Which he did.
Yeah.
And then in one turn, made the little 4'8" kid cry. But that's okay, because he needed it.
Well, this kid kept on, like, this guy, like, would always, he would try to do, like, the Gary Payton, right? He would try to do the Isaiah Thomas and Gary Payton. He would dribble into a double team, and then he'd try to dribble the ball behind his back and stuff, which you can do. But the whole thing is, you can't do that against a double team. And then for some reason, the kid would always, like, take it in the corner and just get buried in the corner. So I told him today, I said, listen, dude, I can't dunk, right? So I don't keep on trying to dunk. I can't dunk. I know this about myself. I said, you can't keep on putting that in the corner over there. And the kid started, like, crying and stuff, but the whole thing is that one of your kids on your team made the kid cry before, because I know this because I was like, he was like wiping his eyes one time coming up or whatever. I was like, hey dude, I'm like,
that was sweat.
It wasn't sweat. No, it wasn't Keith Sweat either. Who can't sing, but he did have that one hit song way back when.
Well, Sweaty Keith.
Sweaty Keith. Cool Keith.
Cool Keith.
Yeah. Ultramagnetic MCs, but he was crying beforehand. So he was crying before, and I was just trying to help the kid, and then he kept on crying. But I made that Chinese kid that, you know, wasn't really doing anything when I first started playing him. He started manning up and muscling up, dude. So
he's Vietnamese.
Well, same thing.
And you got 6 points tonight.
That's what I'm saying. That's all I wanted. How many rebounds did he get?
I don't know.
He was playing tough in the block, right?
Yeah. Well, he's a really good mid range shooter. So the kid we're going to, the other team had a kid that's about 6'4", and then instead of just trying to challenge him, which he would have got stuffed. He kind of stepped back from the block and he buried a bunch of, like...
But he's stronger in the block, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And no. Who taught him to be stronger in the block?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And exactly, Gene.
Didn't even make him cry to do
it. Didn't make him cry. Now he's a good kid. You can tell. That's like my little pet project. So I'm glad he's doing well because I saw that potentiality in him. The potentiality in him. So we are 1 week away from the Royal Rumble. This is Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And we're going to talk a little bit of wrestling today. I don't know if the Raw kind of warrants us doing like a play-by-play, which we're trying to get out of. So what do you want to talk about today? Putting you on the spot. Doesn't have to be anything, you know, it doesn't have to be like this week related.
Yeah, I got a couple things, but I mean, since you bring it up, I mean, we don't need to go play-by-play, but I mean, I think since there was a big build to it and a lot of discussion, you know, Batista made his big return. So I would just start off with that and ask what you thought.
I fell asleep. Nothing new. I never knew what the appeal of Batista is. I feel that they mentioned that he was a 6-time champion. I'm going like, wow, he's a 6-time champion. But it was like the WCW championship, right?
Mostly
on the SmackDown label. I just never understood. I mean, I've never understood the appeal of this guy. And granted, the only two instances that I know about this guy is one of them was in Evolution, which I thought he did really well in, but I really liked Evolution. And then it was the feud between John Cena and him, and they're both cutting really bad promos on it, and he was trying to keep it real, going, whatever, John, oh, whatever, man. Yeah, it didn't work for me, mm-hmm. So that's all I really know about the guy.
Yeah, no, I wasn't too impressed either. I mean, I'm not some huge Batista mark. I'm fine for him. I'm fine with him. I think, you know, if at his best, like, you know, he can carry some good matches. He can be okay on promos. He's what they would hope that, like, Ryback could be.
Was it against more of his opponents, or was it him? I see him as, like, kind of like
necessarily
a,
him, but I mean,
like he's a reactionary wrestler, you know?
Sure, yeah. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not some great technician or a ring psychologist, but, I mean, I've seen matches that he's had that I thought were pretty respectable. I mean, I think he put on a couple decent matches with Undertaker. Him and Randy Orton was interesting enough at the time because, you know, the story built up to it was good enough. He was able to battle John Cena, like, well enough. He's not some, like, big-time, like, guy that I'm going to, like, really get all crazy for. But I'm willing to see, you know, like, since... Because, you know, he was fine in the ring. He was okay on the mic, you know, better at sometimes, worse than others. He got better. Like, you know, he had no mic skills when he started. By the time he was through with Evolution, he was, you know, he could cut a decent enough promo. But, you know, I thought maybe now that he had gotten into the acting, maybe he'd have a little bit more. I was kind of disappointed, and, you know, he really said nothing. But, you know, and then he came in and he squashed Del Rio, which is fine.
I like his tattoos. I like how he finishes back tattoo and stuff and everything.
It's a lot better than the belly button tattoo.
Yeah. And it kind of, I think the most enjoyable part I had of him being on TV was, you always have, there's always like these dumb wrestling fans that said that, The Undertaker is different, like it's a different guy than it was in the past. They have a new Undertaker and stuff, just really stupid stuff like that. And you can say the same thing about Batista. It's like the Batista I know used to have hair and stuff and was a lot bigger and stuff. They have a brand new Batista. You know, they brought in a new guy to take Batista's place.
Because he wears this zip-up sweat jacket.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the Batista that I know.
Yeah.
And even his entrance was a little bit different. You know, the machine gun was just a little bit different than it was from the past. So
he broke out a little sooner, huh?
Yeah, yeah. But on that, so I have two questions for you. The two pressing questions that I have for you. One of them definitely isn't as pressing as the next one. So we kind of know that Sheamus is going to return. I believe he's going to return the Royal Rumble. That's not the question I have. But Hulk Hogan, is he going to return at the Rumble? Is he going to be a special blast from the past that comes out and competes in the Royal Rumble?
I don't think Hogan's going to be around in the Rumble. I mean, I think all signs point to him being around for Mania. But I wouldn't see Hogan doing anything in the Rumble. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of talk about him doing something with Piper and maybe even Mr. T.
You see, like, Piper's, like, distended stomach that he has, dude? I don't know if anybody knows it, but it looks like he has, like, a tumor in his stomach, dude. Like, the last time I saw him, it was, like, for the WWE Network, whatever it was, or maybe they brought him out, like, a couple rounds ago or whatever, but...
They did. Yeah, I saw the crib notes on the back of his hand, like The Rock, but I didn't see any... tumor coming out.
So. It's not a tumor. Mm. Okay, so most pressing question. So Punk draws the number one seed in the Royal Rumble, and they kind of had this nice little kind of factual percentages about the number one seed winning 66% of the time or something, and the last guy, and it matches the number 30 winning the same amount. So do you think Punk is going to go all the way? Do you think he's finally going to be able to headline WrestleMania as the number one seed?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think...
With the build-up and everything that they're doing with it, you know, because it's a very quaint or quiet build-up, and they have all the building blocks in place where if he does win it...
Yeah, no, he definitely could. I think he's definitely on the short list. In fact, like, one of the questions I was going to ask you is to kind of pick who you think maybe is your top three or five guys that could actually win the Rumble. And give me one guy that you were going to stand by on that. I think definitely that there's two things. There's one that like Kane had that promo on SmackDown where he said, like, you know, the Authority wants you to headline WrestleMania, and then they back it up and put him as the number one. So the way they're building it is like number 1, 2, and 27 are like the numbers you'd want to have, right? They're talking about 27 is the number that has won the most Manias, and then Rumbles, and then they also bring up that one has won twice and two has won twice as well. So
one has won twice, because I thought you had Michaels. Was Benoit number one?
I think Benoit was number one.
And then didn't they have
Ric Flair?
Flair was number two.
Yeah, Flair was two.
Okay, all right. But and then
I don't know exactly.
Stone Cold, I thought, was a number one entrant too, right?
I don't know. I don't know who it is, but just you know, in the broadcast, they've kind of beaten in that one has won one twice and two has won twice. So I mean, by putting him at number one, I mean it's a great opportunity. And if there's anybody that can go wire to wire, it would be a guy like CM Punk. Even though we kind of mentioned, seems like his energy has been down a little bit the last month or so.
And I found it funny that they put him at number one if they actually want him to win, and his energy is completely gone. It's just, I mean, it is gone. I don't know. I kind of feel bad because even like his match against Billy Gunn was just a really kind of effort and just being tired, and didn't have the same type of zip that he usually has. And I thought it really showed there. As in terms of the guys, I think I haven't really thought about it. I mean, if you look at like kind of the guy, I mean, they haven't had like any kind of build up where a guy's been held down for so long and hasn't been able to get over the hump. I mean, you can probably say that about Daniel Bryan. I think Daniel Bryan is definitely the dark horse, but I think he has too many elements coming in. I think he has that whole Wyatt family he has to deal with. I don't see him winning the Rumble.
I don't even know if he's going to be in it. I mean, they haven't really even said that. Like, because there was like that kind of discussion. I guess he got a concussion about on the previous Raw, and then they were even talking that the match between him and Wyatt might not happen at the pay per view. Since they announced it on Raw, I'm pretty excited. I mean, that's a match I definitely want to see. But there's been no kind of indication that he'd have any kind of like major run going into the Rumble. So I mean, I'll try to start answering my question, and then maybe after I bounce that, you get some ideas. But so if I have to pick, say, around five guys that I think have a legit shot, I'll say Batista, okay, just because the way they brought him back, the build, that would be the guy that has the build, and you have this automatic rivalry between him and Randy Orton that they could go to kind of by default. So Batista's got a really good shot to win it. Roman Reigns has a really good shot to win it. CM Punk, especially now that they're going to give him the first entrance gimmick, he's got a pretty good shot to win it. As much as I probably don't like it, Sheamus probably has a better chance than most to win it. Just on they've been keeping him really kind of anonymous with the whole thing, and I think most smart people know he's probably going to come back in that match, but they haven't said anything. And then who would be my fifth guy would actually probably be Bray.
Bray Wyatt.
Bray.
Okay.
I think Bray is like, if you're going to go for some dark horse out of nowhere, I could see Bray being the guy. Like, kind of a lot of talk about like that they really like Bray. And so, yeah, I'd say Bray maybe. Even slightly better chance than Daniel Bryan, maybe. That'd be like the five that I'd throw out there that I think have a real chance to win that match. And any one of them, I mean, I wouldn't really be super happy with Sheamus. Batista wouldn't be my pick, but I'm kind of resigned to the fact that there's probably about a 30 to 40% chance that it's going to be him. But any of the other guys, I think Punk would be a great story if he could finally break through and get to that WrestleMania main event. And Roman Reigns, I mean, I think the build for him has been good enough. I don't know if it's exactly time to break the Shield up. I think there's probably going to be something pretty big that happens with the Shield in the match. That's going to kind of further the dissension that's happening. But if they go ahead and make him the guy now, you know, I'm not really going to have a problem with that either.
So who's the guy? So your second part of that question was who you're kind of rooting for to do it, right?
Well, who I'm rooting for is different.
Was that your question? Or the guy you're going to stand by?
I was going to say that we could do both. I mean,
well, what was the guy you're going to stand by? Was that's like, this is your pick.
If someone made me throw money down, I'd probably say Batista.
All right.
If I
like that, but
if I think a guy who I think has a chance and the guy I'm pulling for it's either Punk or Reigns. And those would be the two.
So I would pretty much pick those five guys as well, except for I wouldn't put Bray in there, and I'd probably put Daniel Bryan in there, just because it's funny, like, if he has a concussion, then how come he's not out like Dolph Ziggler was for the 2 months that Dolph Ziggler was out or whatever it was? I think the dark horse for me is going to be Daniel Bryan. I don't know if they're ever going to have him headline a WrestleMania as that, so I think that he's kind of out of it. Same along the lines of CM Punk. If anybody's deserving to headline, this guy's been waiting for, like, since he's been in the company, to headline a WrestleMania. That's what he's always kind of strived for. And then he had, like, the two-year run where he should have been a headliner at WrestleMania, never was. I think if it's anybody's time, I think it should be his. But I don't think it is either. I think Roman Reigns would be very, very intriguing. I'd be happy with any three of those guys headlining, you know, winning the Royal Rumble. Because I think there's a lot with Daniel Bryan. There's a lot of stories that you can do with that, because he still has to deal with the Wyatt family.
He's got unfinished business with the Orton too.
Yeah, and so you have that Roman Reigns, just because with the promos that he's done, and the one, you know, because the Shield was kind of doing the whole, like, you know, we're brothers and stuff and this and this, and Roman Reigns was like, hey, he's like, I'll knock your ass out, and I'll get you out of the ring. So he kind of has a foundation to actually win one. I don't think he will. He definitely, work wise, I think he's deserving, but I think the other two guys are deserving as well. Sheamus, I can see him winning just because it's a return for him, and he kind of fits that whole kind of babyface mold where they think he has crossover potential. But if you really want to do the crossover potential, if I had to put money on it, I'd probably pick Batista as well, just because he's coming out with the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It'll probably come around the same time that WrestleMania is coming out, and it's tremendous crossover potential for both the movie and for WWE. I think that's a marketing ploy that they can't pass up. I just think it sucks though. I mean, I just think if he wins it, it would fall along the lines of every WrestleMania over the past 3 years where I do not care about the main event. Uh-huh. And as much as I like The Rock and stuff, I never wanted to see The Rock versus John Cena. I had no interest in that whatsoever, especially when I knew that John Cena would end up winning that because The Rock was winning all the stuff beforehand. So, I think it's a toss-up between CM Punk and Batista. And I don't think WWE Creative has enough... they don't have enough guts to have CM Punk be the main event unless you can do something where it's Batista versus Brock Lesnar. And we haven't even mentioned Brock either. But with Brock, it's just because contractually he's not there day in and day out.
Right.
I don't see how you can have a champion that isn't there every week and fight, you know, wrestling at the same time. But I think Batista has the same type of contract too.
Well, actually, everything I read, they said Batista signed for 2 years and he plans to be there. This was his plan as, like, his final run. So at that level, I respect the fact that if he's coming back, he's coming back to do it for real and not coming back as a part-timer, if that really is the case. And, you know, I'm willing to give Batista some time to see if he can kind of mold back into being like a pretty top level guy. You know, he was never great on the mic before, so I wouldn't expect him to walk back in and be great. But if, you know, he takes him a little bit of time to get better on the promos.
Top level in WWE Creative. I mean, because them seeing some guys top level is not what we're seeing as top level.
Right, right. But like, I'll put it this way, like. You could see him and a guy like Ryback is kind of like the same kind of mold, but at least Batista has enough personality that if you're going to put him into like main event or top level matches, that at least he can go in and give some semblance of a build towards a match. Whereas Ryback's just going to walk circles around a ring and raise his hands and say Ryback rules. It's pretty lame.
I didn't think that was lame at all. I kind of actually like that. The main event, nothing. He did that in the main event.
Yeah, maybe the first time he walked around, but like after he does it four times and he still can't say anything more than Ryback rules, I don't know. It's pretty
cool. He's playing the heel role, man. You know,
he's trying to. Not too successfully in my eyes.
Okay, so
it's better than what he's been doing.
Yeah. So we're both saying Batista in this thing.
Yeah. If you're gonna make me throw money down, I'm gonna go Batista.
All right. So that's the Rumble, and we are getting that, right? We're watching it, right? On Sunday. Okay. There's a lot of dead air going on right now, dude. So
apologize. I nodded on audio. My bad. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. No, I wasn't talking about you. I was talking about me.
Oh.
I'm usually not rambling on like I usually am and always am. So so that's kind of our little quasi-Royal Rumble preview. What else? I mean, what else you want to willow in the mire or dabble in the mire or whatever?
So this was something I think last week I mentioned that you're asking as we went off the air if I had anything else, and I think I said I did, but I was willing to table it.
Yes.
So I'll go ahead and bring it up now. I think, like, you know, you watch wrestling, and there's a pretty good percentage of these guys that are second or third generation guys. And WWE's real willing to bring them in and give them a chance, whether they make it to the top or not. You know, that's another story. But I would say, like, I was going to ask you, who would be, like, the best 5 second or third generation guys in WWE today?
I have to come up with them.
Just today. I mean, you know, be tough to do if we're gonna go all time, right? Because then, you know, you start saying, like, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage is the son of Poffo and Kurt Hennig and this
and
that.
And Dusty Rhodes is the son of a plumber. He's the plumber's son.
Yeah, well, I don't know if his dad, the plumber, was a wrestler.
No, he wasn't.
But on today's day and age, you could bring up Goldust or Cody as second generation guys. But, I mean, what second generation guys do you really see doing it? Because I see, you know, there's definitely this market to have them there, and there's varying levels of success. Like, Curtis Axel is a guy who, you know, he got a pretty good rub off of being the son of Kurt Hennig. But is he really, like, a guy that you see as having this big potential, or he's kind of floundering? And then you can look and see other guys like, say, the Usos, who seem like they're actually getting a really legitimate push as a tag team right now. And I think they're probably two of the better workers that the company has. So just, you know, if you're going to give me a list of, like, 5 or so guys, they're second generation.
But I have to know the 5. That's the problem. I don't know if I can come up with 5.
I think you could.
Okay, so you have Curtis Axel, that's 1. You can put the Usos probably as 2, both of them combined. Because you really can't tell the difference between the two guys, and especially in terms of their movesets, too.
Agreed.
You have Randy Orton, and hell, who's after that? So you have Goldust and Cody.
So you could go Alberto Del Rio.
And then you can also go with, and if we want to talk current, we could also go with Road Dogg, too, with the Armstrong family. Is that 5? Did I pass the test with 5?
That's 6. I still don't think you brought the best one.
Well, who's the best one?
For me, for my money right now, Roman Reigns.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's part of this larger family, though, dude. I mean, it's not the second generation. This is like, it's probably about 4 or 5 generations deeper.
Right,
maybe.
Well, yeah, just that they're coming in with a family legacy.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you could say the same thing about the Usos.
Yeah. You know, if I had to rank them, I would put Curtis Axel on the bottom. There's nothing that I've seen with Curtis Axel that I can see with him right now doing anything whatsoever. I don't see him long-term being a champion. I don't see him really garnering anybody's interest. But, I mean, you look at his dad. His dad wasn't like, I mean, his dad was good. Everybody said he was good. But he was never in a kind of like the main event picture. You know, he was always a good kind of mid-card guy, higher echelon mid-card guy. But never really did what he was supposed to do. He never had the run. That's why we actually put him in the Hall of Kayfabe, because he never had that run that we thought he should have.
Yeah. I mean, he did in AWA, but not in WWE. I'll throw another second, third generation.
Natalya?
No. But sure. Bray.
Bray Wyatt, yeah. Okay. Well, so, yeah, so you have a pretty good list there. I mean, the Usos I really like the Usos. I thought they really come to their own. There's a couple things I don't like about the Usos. I think they're great in the ring. They've really kind of established themselves in terms of what you can expect them out of the ring, and they do a lot of good spots. And they're crowd pleasing, just like Rikishi was. A little bit more athletic than Rikishi was. Rikishi was pretty damn athletic, but for all the wrong reasons. I mean, he would do that when he'd get clothesline. He'd do that flip.
That was sick.
Yeah, but the one thing I do want to say is, it's either Jay or Ray or whatever.
Jay and Jim.
He does that Phoenix Splash. He's been doing that Phoenix Splash for the past.
Yeah.
And that's taken from your boy Hayabusa. Yeah. And the first time I saw that, it's like, dude, I'm like, this guy's like 200 some odd pounds. More like, you know, 240 or whatever.
240-ish.
Yeah, and this guy's throwing off Phoenix Splashes, and it looks totally legit. I mean, yeah. It is legit. Anytime you do it, it's legit.
Yeah.
But it looks effortless. Yeah. And it's like, I'm like, man,
well,
this
even
is...
even their Superfly Splash off the, like, to finish, I mean, he's getting some solid elevation off of that.
And then
so,
you got the Samoan Drop to set that up.
Tamina, another second generation.
No, her dad killed a guy, dude. I don't want to see her
disqualified.
Yeah, I don't want to see her follow the same footsteps as her dad and kill someone. Although that pie shot was pretty heinous. So you never know. I mean, the Usos to me, I mean, there's nothing they can do except for be a tag team champion. Not one of them's ever going to be a world champion.
Sure.
And it's kind of funny. We're going to have a little bit of an illusion here. There's only one Samoan guy that became a champion and had a really good year run as being like this dominant guy, and we'll get into that later on. I don't see either one of those guys doing that. I really have to give credit to Randy Orton. I think Randy Orton, and it's funny, Randy Orton's promos are starting to become really spot on. And if I had to pick now, I'd probably pick Randy Orton just because he's weathered that storm where he was giving everything in the beginning as a champion. He floundered in that role, and then he kind of did this work for about 2-3 years, where the stuff that he did shouldn't have worked, but it worked. I mean, Legacy to me shouldn't have worked because Legacy was good when it was I think it was Cody and then that Samoan dude.
Was Cody, DiBiase, and Afa.
Yeah, and I thought Afa, I really liked Afa. I don't remember what happened to that guy, but it worked then. But then when it was Cody and DiBiase, I mean, DiBiase couldn't carry it.
DiBiase was terrible.
So you had this kind of whole gimmick and where he was just like he was a short fuse and did breathe all hard and stuff. Like, their promos were just like them just breathing all hard. They're standing in the old Black Moon days, like standing in the cypher.
The cypher?
Yeah, they're all standing in the cypher, just breathe off. Like they just got done like making love or something, but it never really worked. And then he became a really big time face, and it's funny. Like The Rock brought me back into watching wrestling. CM Punk made me keep on watching wrestling, but Randy Orton, when he got that face push, that was one of the reasons why I would watch. I wanted to see Randy Orton wrestle. I really liked what he did, and then once that kind of baby face thing kind of tailed off, he was pretty much stuck in the mire. For like a year, where nobody cared about this guy, and he slowly started doing. And we chronicled it on the podcast. We're like, you know, he's starting to have these really good matches, say with like the Big Show, and he's doing the job. He's doing the job for a lot of people. He did the job for Daniel Bryan when they were both faces, and so he kind of laid the groundwork. He's always been there. Granted, he wouldn't be there when he failed some of the WWE drug policy and everything like that. But he was always doing the work. I think out of all the second star guys currently, I think he's done the most work, and I'm commending him for the work that he's done. I think he's turned himself into a really good heel champion. Mm-hmm. All John Cena feuds aside, you can only do so much with John Cena within a feud. But I really liked what he's done. I think he works really well when he's going to like the opening promo for Raw, which is The Authority and Randy Orton. Now normally I'd fast forward that, but I watched it and I was like, yeah, I wouldn't say it's entertaining, but it was engaging. And so I really think that
it was worthwhile to watch it for like what it was doing for the story.
No, I wouldn't even say that. I could care less about the story. I really like the dynamic of this kind of Triple H and Stephanie pick this guy and they have beef with Randy Orton in terms of what he's done and kind of his actions and everything. So I really like that whole dynamic of it. It's like there's a lot of entry points within the story where it can go to point A or point B or go point C or go like point one or point two. There's a lot of different avenues that you can do with the storyline. So, and I don't think that really happens if he's not playing the kind of the kind of the heel that is kind of worried and looking over his back all the time and is not getting his due that he wants. I thought he's really turned it around. And one of the biggest things that you said was that he wasn't getting his heel heat because Triple H was taking it over. Well, now he has legitimate heat by himself. It has nothing to do with John Cena's punching John Cena's dad. He was doing that before. Bray's a good... I mean, Bray, I didn't even think about Bray. It's just kind of funny because it's so... it was kind of funny because Bray Wyatt cut that promo about how his dad wasn't there for him or whatever it was. And I was like, what? Your dad's Mike Rotunda. It's like, did your dad tell you to pay your taxes too many times or something? Like, hey, Dad, I got an F in math. Can you help me out with my algebra? He's like, you got to pay your taxes. And, you know, that's... Yeah, it's kind of funny to me.
He was too busy with the varsity club. He was at practice.
In varsity club, and then right when, so then it's kind of like the whole like Austin Powers thing, right? With Scott Evil, he finally starts becoming into sports and stuff and everything, and then Mike Rotunda does a complete 180 on him and starts paying his taxes and stuff. And it's like I played sports, but now you want me to pay my taxes. Bray Wyatt definitely has the most potential out of all of them. Bray's promos are great. Every single one of them is good. It's not forced, too. It's like, we know the role that Bray Wyatt is supposed to play. He's supposed to be kind of like this kind of God complex guy. But all of his promos kind of adhere to that, but it doesn't sound forced. It sounds like real. Mm-hmm. And even though we know what the gimmick is, and it's a gimmick that I wouldn't have liked, I'm like totally like sold on this guy. And every gimmick that he does just works. And even though I'm kind of against the whole kind of Kentucky hillbilly up in the hills, running your own little religion and stuff. It's something that I do not identify with at all. Something that I don't even like and wouldn't like. If you were to tell me when Husky Harris came out and said, like, we're going to give this guy a God complex and he's going to be the king of the hillbillies and stuff, I'd be like, nah, dude. I'm like, I don't want to watch that. But he's turned, you know, with what, just his personality alone and the way he believes in his gimmick, like the way Million Dollar Man believed in his gimmick. Just kind of the same type of thing. So he's definitely sold into his character, and he's been doing it very well. But if I was to have to pick like the best generation, second generation wrestler right now, it has to be Randy Orton.
So you go Orton, Wyatt, Reigns, Usos.
I'd probably put Usos above Reigns right now, because I really like the work that the Usos have done.
Just on work alone.
Yeah, and on their work alone, and then, you know, the funny thing is that they're getting this push. But they're getting put. They're not winning clean. You know, it's countouts here, or it's disqualifications there, and it's also kind of like the big master plan that Daniel Bryan had to be weaker so he could get Bray in the ring by himself. So, but I thought, you know, over this course of time, like out of all the tag teams when they first started pushing those tag teams, the Usos were probably like my least favorite tag team out of all of them. And I think last week I said that the Usos right now are the best tag team that WWE has right now. Mm-hmm. And they definitely have the same type of aura of like any like big tag team, like British Bulldogs, you know, Hart Foundation. It's like when you say the Usos, they got it down, dude. I don't like the dancing they do. I don't like kind of like the whole like kind of, I don't want to say hip-hop type culture type thing. I mean, I think that's kind of, whenever it's a minority wrestler and you're dancing and stuff and everything like that, I kind of generally don't like that, because that's all they expect out of minorities is for them to kind of like just be entertainers and put it on the good foot and stuff. But
I think I'm not going to disagree with what you're saying there, but I think for Samoan wrestlers, that's actually a step up, because if you want to go like traditional, what they do with a Samoan or a Polynesian wrestler is just there's some psychopathic, mindless beast. And at least they're getting some kind of like semblance of humanity. So I think, as much as like I kind of agree with you on what you're saying about the way the minority wrestlers usually played, I think that is actually kind of like a move in the right direction as far as they let a Polynesian wrestler get over. So I'm not too mad about the fact that they're dancing compared to like what they could be doing. I mean, they could be coming out with like a
face paint.
Well, on and not be able to talk, and you can't punch him in the head. Like, you're gonna hurt your hand if you punch him in the head. I mean, they've totally gone away from that whole Samoan gimmick of you can never hurt a Samoan's head because it's too thick, and you know they're just gonna get beat off with stupid stuff all the time because you know they can't think, but they're just these mindless brawlers. So I mean, I will say that I think a lot of it has to do with The Rock and Rikishi to a certain degree too. Like those two guys more than any other, and you know, maybe not so much Yokozuna because they didn't even acknowledge that he was Samoan. But those two guys more than any others, like they made him just wrestlers instead of like straight up like a Samoan stereotype. And I think they've kind of taken the next step on that, or at least kind of like at least gone parallel to what the what those previous guys did. So yeah, I can't agree on that totally, but you know, I'm fine with what they do. I think they still got a lot of room for growth. But yeah, no, I definitely agree with you that in the ring, I think they're probably the best team right now.
So who's your biggest second generation guy?
Well,
so I think you want to say Roman Reigns.
I would have, but I mean, you made a pretty solid argument for Randy Orton. I don't think I can disagree with that. And between Reigns and Wyatt, I mean, I think Wyatt's. I think they're kind of like equal. I think Reigns has proven himself more in the ring. And Wyatt's proven himself more on the mic. So, you know, you toss a coin on those. Definitely the Wyatts would be the next one. The Usos would be, like, tied at 4. And then after that, you know, I think you pretty much got to come down to Cody or Goldust. And, I mean, even that one's kind of a coin toss. I mean, I think Cody...
Cody has the complete package.
Yeah.
But they always, whenever they give him a big push... They always put him back down to the side,
exactly.
down the road again.
And Goldust, you know, I don't think he has the high ceiling that Cody does, but it's been really good just seeing Cody come back. So, I mean, sorry, Goldust come back. So, I still think on the overall, if you're going to have one of those two guys have a singles run, I think Cody would be the guy that could carry it further than Goldust could. So I'll say Cody.
I don't know if he can. I mean, seriously, I don't know. I don't know if Cody, I mean, we always say that Cody, if he has a good singles run, he can do it. I don't know if he can. I think everything was in place when he got kicked out. I thought that storyline was done very well, but then they always put him with someone else or they put him with Goldust. To me, it's just kind of like, okay, we have this guy and he has a ton of potential, but we're not ready for him yet to kind of take over, so let's put him back with Goldust. And
yeah, but that's not necessarily means that Cody can't do it. I mean, that's more because they want to push some of these same old guys that they always want to push. So I don't think – I think if you gave Cody, like, a full-on run where they were going to support him, I think Cody could take it farther than Goldust.
And Cody's been doing some great stuff in the ring. I mean, that dive he did outside of the ring was – I thought that was – that's one of the best things I've seen in a long time. And for that to kind of do it from Cody, this guy has it. I mean, he's able that disaster kick sets up a lot of things.
He's got the disaster kick. He still can have that Alabama slam. He incorporated Samoa Joe's muscle buster. His crossroads is legit, and then he's pretty much adopted any move that Goldust has adopted too. I actually really like his like when they go hot tag with Cody and he kind of springboards into that missile drop kick. I think that's a really good spot too. So I think Cody could carry the ball as far as they would let him. You know, I don't see anything that would get in his way.
Okay.
So I will say Cody number 5.
All right. This is a very step by step podcast today, and it's kind of just because we're waiting for the Royal Rumble to happen and kind of see what happens from there. What else you got? I mean, we can. Get into kind of
what else I got. I think most of those segments are mine. So, what you got?
I don't have anything, man. I mean,
you got nothing.
No, I'm doing the whole flipping driving an hour and a half run of for work, driving to a grocery store an hour and a half away, and working over there, and driving an hour and a half back, and working 9-hour days and stuff. So I'm kind of beat. So I apologize, and you kind of throw in the fact that I got to. Try to make some more money here and there by doing something else or whatever.
Did you get at PW Mania?
I did a little bit, but I don't know if it's time wise. I don't think I can devote the time that the guy wants me to. The guy is very good. I mean, he's very straightforward. Doesn't pull his punches with what he wants and stuff. But I just don't think I have. I mean, I might have to have 3 jobs. You know, so it's like, you know, part time here, part time there, part time here. I don't know if I can do another, a fourth kind of thing, you know, and do it for free. You know, so...
That would be the key.
That would be the key. But, I mean, granted, he's not in a position to do it, so, I mean, more power to him. I still got to email him back and kind of tell him what's going on and everything. So there's that. let's go ahead and get into Hall of Kayfabe then.
Is that the call?
I think that's the call, yeah.
I mean, I had another name in my mind.
Well, we kind of alluded to earlier in this podcast. If you have another guy in mind, why don't we do this? Why don't we? Because this guy's eventually going to be in. So my candidate for Hall of Kayfabe is going to be Yokozuna. Right. And what's the other name that you had in mind? No, I mean I want to know what the other name.
Yeah, well, let's just save it then.
Save it. Yeah. Okay. Let's go with Yokozuna. We alluded to this in the probably about 25 minutes earlier. This guy did have a run, though. He did have a run where he's a world champion. But it's kind of funny that you're kind of bringing up the whole kind of Samoan type thing, because even though they label this guy as Japanese, he did follow the kind of what they do with Samoan wrestlers, is that they'll have like a really kind of intimidating run. And then once that run's over to where they build up like a champion they want to build up, they throw this guy off to the side. And granted, Yokozuna did have some weight problems and everything, and you can say, WWE could say, like, well, we kind of feared for his life, in the ring. But at the same time, I think a part of that weight gain had to do is because they gave him everything. They gave him the keys in the beginning, and they gave him everything that he wanted, and then they took it all away from him. And that's kind of like a major thing. I mean, I don't know. For most people, depression would set in. You'd be depressed and stuff. And see, you would go to what you know. And obviously, it was food for this guy. But Yokozuna, to me, was probably one of the most... And he doesn't really get any credit. And they've never really done a story about this guy. And there's people that do say certain things, like other wrestlers that say this and this. But they never really gave this guy his due. He was probably one of the most athletic big men ever. The guy was like, what, some 400, even 500 pounds at one time?
I think towards the end, he was pushing like 6 and 7. Like, and some of the stuff I had read, he kind of had made it his goal to be like the heaviest wrestler there ever was, the heaviest champion. And he was actually, he was at 600 pounds trying to get heavier, which, wasn't the best thing. But, I mean, yeah, for that size, I mean, yeah, the guy was pretty damn athletic and he can move.
Guy was doing drop kicks and... I think he was kind of doing the whole Rikishi thing, too. Like, he'd take, like, crazy bumps, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, flips and stuff and everything. I mean, it's just kind of sad that when you have, like, a talent like Yokozuna was, and then it's really easy for him to push off the side. I remember when he left, he was kind of like, he was sending some guy up for the bonsai drop and everything, and he slipped and fell, and then he lost the match. He's like, well, I'm going to come back, and he never came back. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later or 3 years later, he's dead. So I just thought, character-wise, he was a really good character. Really liked his moves in the ring. I mean, he carried the company for a while. I mean, he carried the company probably about for a year. And I remember, like, when the video games came out and stuff like that, it's like the first guy, like, I'd always kind of pick was, like, a Yokozuna. And it's always kind of funny, too. It's like, I think if when you... have like a wrestling video game, right? You kind of have your archetypes, right? You're going to have your monster heel. It's going to be kind of in the vein of like a Ric Flair or something like that. You're going to have your Japanese wrestler, right? This really like just, throat cutting Japanese wrestler. Everything's hard kicks, acrobatic.
Technical piece down, stiff.
And then he would have like this one big like acrobatic move that had a ton of power to it, right? Well, for me, also, there's always like the oversized, huge wrestler that could do like crazy moves and stuff and everything like that. Well, that's what Yokozuna was, mm-hmm. And it's just kind of it's just kind of a sad story. I thought the guy, if they had used him a little bit more, and kind of like what they did with the Big Show, because they tabled the Big Show for a while too, because the guy was just gaining too much weight, mm-hmm. And they finally say, hey, you know what? Like, you got to start losing weight. And Big Show left WWE for a while and stuff, and then he came back, but it's kind of on the WWE's terms, saying, hey, you got to kind of work on this, and we have to work on your ring presence, too, in terms of how you do a match. You don't work our style, and you got to kind of adhere to our style to become a better wrestler. And I think the Big Show is, Big Show doesn't do a lot in the ring, but what he does very, very well. And that's his strong points, with what he does. It's just too bad that they didn't do that with Yokozuna either.
Yeah, if they could have, like, just gotten, yeah, gotten Yokozuna on the path back then of what they had the Big Show doing now, then yeah, it probably wouldn't have been a better story. But I mean, I think it's still pretty good for him. I mean, I would say, without really having done any research, generally I think of like The Rock as the first Samoan champion, but I would think Yokozuna has to be the first Samoan WWE World Champion, and that's a pretty big accomplishment in itself, considering like some of the guys that had come through. And he could put on good programs with a guy like Bret Hart, right? You wouldn't really think like that Bret Hart and Yokozuna would put on interesting matches. And granted, anybody can have a good match with Bret Hart, but I mean, Yokozuna was...
Whoa. Come on. Not everybody can have a good match with Bret Hart, but go ahead.
No?
I don't think so.
Who didn't?
I don't think Mr. Perfect had a good match with
I mean, I don't think you can say he didn't have a good match with him. I mean, you might say that the match is a little bit overrated, but okay, you can't say that it wasn't a good match.
That match kind of puts me to sleep, but go ahead. Continue.
All right. Well, most anybody had a good match with Bret Hart, okay? And in some cases, it was more on Bret's behalf, but I mean, I think that Yokozuna was an equal part in the matches that he had with Bret Hart. And I think that's saying a lot, because you don't necessarily say that for a lot of like these really big wrestlers. It's usually them just kind of dominant, and then this whole underdog story on a guy that can really wrestle. But I mean, I thought the stories that they did were pretty good, and Yokozuna came out looking good. And, it sucks that he has to end up just like jobbing to Hogan, but I mean, that was pretty much par for the course for the time. But Yokozuna still, he's kind of like in that time where wrestling was kind of on its down, and before it came back up again, and he had a good run in a time where there wasn't a whole lot of people watching, and maybe because of who he is or the fact that it's hard to really sell that guy. They don't talk about him a whole lot, but it'd be nice to see some kind of recognition towards him, or even just towards the Inoue family, like as a whole. If they with all the DVDs they come out with the new network, if they would ever just think about, why don't we do some kind of program on the whole Inoue family, and
you'd buy it today, would come out, wouldn't you?
I'd be,
and so would I.
Yeah, and he'd be a big part of it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You talk about the Inoue family, but you also talk about Samoan wrestlers in general. He hardly ever gets mentioned, and it's funny. It's like he's always like one of these guys.
Not to cut you off, but I don't think that most of Middle America even cared enough to think about whether he was actually Japanese or not.
I did.
You're not Middle America.
That's true. I'm not. But he's always, you never talk about this guy. And with all the athleticism that he had, I mean, this guy should be talked a whole lot more. He was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, but he wasn't included in these speeches or anything like that, or nobody, when they kind of sent him off and stuff, and people talked about him, like, they didn't show that part. And it's like, that's like the WWE network. That what really interests me is, like, I want to see those Hall of Fame ones, like every single Hall of Fame speech that someone does.
Yeah,
he's just kind of, it's kind of a, you talk about Samoans in general in wrestling, and they're always kind of the workers. They're always the guys that either make someone else look really well, and they kind of extend the career of someone else, and they never really get the push that they're supposed to get. This guy did get a push. He didn't get it as a Samoan, he got it as a Japanese guy. I think Mr. Fuji had a lot. You have to give Mr. Fuji a lot of credit with his run. But go back and like watch one of his matches, or go back and watch four or five of his matches. He had a lot of good spots. Very, very intimidating in the ring. He wasn't a giant, like you have your giant wrestlers and stuff, but he sure carried himself like one. Like, you couldn't put this guy over, and you couldn't do any of this stuff. And I think Luger actually slammed him or whatever, and it kind of pushed Luger up to the spotlight. And they're like, well, Luger can't handle it, so let's give it to Bret Hart. So, yeah, it's just kind of a sad state of affairs. This guy could have done a whole lot more. As athletic as this guy was in the ring, he definitely deserved a whole lot better. So let's just leave it at that. So the match I want to talk about from the past, because I know you didn't do your homework.
No, I didn't.
Which is fine. It's all good, because, hey, the past, like, 3 weekends, I couldn't do anything either. I've been watching football the whole time, so I will give you a pass on that. But the match I do want to, it kind of brings up two guys that one guy we've already we've done his laugh. But the match I want to talk about is the WrestleMania 4 match, and it was Macho Man versus Ted DiBiase for the title.
All right,
and I'll let you go ahead and.
Well, you're gonna have me go ahead. I really can't. I don't know if I've seen that one.
Yeah, you have. We've seen it, Dean. That's the one. That's the one where Les Hogan came out and hit Ted DiBiase with the chair. Dude, it was the tournament, dude. We used to watch
that
tournament.
Oh, that was the tournament. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Talk to me when I'm asleep. You say you got beef for blue cheese?
No. Yeah, so, no,
you got beef with blue cheese? No, I got beef for two keys.
Oh. I mean, I just remember Macho Man just running through guys and that more than anything. Mostly I just remember just being really excited that Macho Man was finally getting some run. And that's kind of my main memory of that. I don't really specifically remember the match too much. I mean, DiBiase put on good matches. That's why he's in the Hall. And that was a pretty big deal at the time, even though it was kind of like a thing where it was like two guys that you know could work, that could talk pretty good, but never really got their due. And even though I was much a bigger fan for Macho, you know, I like DiBiase, and I didn't want DiBiase to win that match by any means, but I like DiBiase, and him and Macho could put on a good match because both of them could work.
Well, leading up to that match was Macho Man pretty much ran the gauntlet. Like he got his ass kicked in every single match, and I remember his first match. I think he had to go against Slickster's two guys. I think Boss Man might have been the first one that he had to fight. And then I kind of remember the whole...
he won Akeem by, like, a disqualification.
Something like that. Yeah. But then at the end, like, Akeem was trying to hit him with Slickster's stick.
His pimp staff.
Yeah. And I remember him rolling around and trying to avoid the stick and stuff. I don't know if he ever actually got hit or not. So you go into this match, and it's kind of like the thing with, like... We can look back now and say, like, you know, oh, yeah, DiBiase, you know, good wrestler and, you know, great athlete from Minnesota. But... at the time, we didn't like the guy at all. We thought this guy like had no business being in the ring. There's definitely no way that he should have been a main event player.
Did DiBiase like pay a couple guys to go down in that tournament?
Yeah, he pretty much he got a free pass to the
finals, right?
Yeah. So what I really liked about it was that Macho Man was just hurt like all hell, right? And he was like he had injuries to his shoulder or whatever. His back was out and stuff. So DiBiase was fresh, and DiBiase was just. You're kind of sitting there going like, okay, like, dude, DiBiase, first of all, the guy sucks. I hate DiBiase. I hate the Million Dollar Man. But the reason why you hate him so much is what DiBiase did, just his character, the way he bought into his character. And he was dominating the match because Macho Man was so hurt. And every time, like, Macho Man would try to, you know, kind of break out and kind of break free and stuff, DiBiase would shut it down.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was a really good match in terms of it really showed off to me the character of DiBiase. It was kind of like the whole thing when, like I always kind of go back, what your homework was supposed to be was to watch the Four Horsemen with Blanchard and Anderson go against Barry Windham and Lex Luger. Right. And I'm going like, how the hell can these two guys even be in the same ring with these two other guys? I mean, Lex Luger is all yoked out. Barry Windham is like 6'5", just like, a prototypical wrestler, and then these two small guys kind of control the match and stuff. And you're going like, how the hell can this happen? Well, same with DiBiase. It's like, how the hell is DiBiase like even like put in the same breath with Macho Man? Because Macho Man has so much charisma, has so much athleticism. Like, there's no way that DiBiase should even be in the same ring, granted arena that Macho Man was. But DiBiase made it very believable. Macho Man made it very believable at the same time. You have, like, this guy that's really hurt. DiBiase's controlling because Macho Man is hurt. And then Hulk Hogan kind of steals the spotlight and hits DiBiase in the back with a chair. And Jesse's just going crazy. Like, how could you cheer for this guy?
It's a miscarriage of justice, McMahon.
Pretty much, so, yeah.
Well, and I think that goes back to really good storytelling. It's like, I think anybody knew that if you were to put a fresh Macho Man against a fresh DiBiase that Macho Man would be pretty close to a squash match on him. But if you go and make DiBiase kind of pay his way through the whole tournament and Macho Man have to go through the paces, as Stone Cold would say, and then you kind of have this kind of more even playing field where DiBiase could be on top for most of that match, and then it takes something like a swerve from Hogan or a little bit of luck from Macho Man to come through and win. And it's what everybody wanted to see. Everybody wanted to see Macho Man win, and everyone wanted to see DiBiase lose at the time. So yeah, it worked pretty good, and it was good. And, you know, I missed the King of the Ring. You know, I think that's something they could use, like, as a tournament once a year, even if it's not a pay-per-view. You know, if they just dedicate, I mean, it's a 3-hour Raw. I mean, you dedicate 1 3-hour Raw to having, like, the King of the Ring tournament, which they had done in the past a couple of times. I mean, I think it's a pretty solid gimmick that could give somebody some momentum and be a little bit meaningful. So,
as long as they don't wheel out King Sheamus or the King of Kings in the Conan the Barbarian gear and stuff like that, right?
Exactly, Chief.
So, WWE Network, you are getting it, right?
I mean, I haven't thought much deeper about it, but I would imagine that I will be doing that.
You weren't sitting on your bed and visualizing?
No.
You using the credit card and buying it and stuff or anything?
No.
Just sitting there with your eyes closed? And,
yeah.
Okay, so, you're going to get the WWE Network. I know you are. Okay, so, first match you want to see on the WWE Network that you can watch, because you can pretty much watch any match. What's the match that you want to see?
I don't even know that there's a particular match. I mean, I think...
that's not good enough, man. I mean, come on. I mean, like, they have an extensive library. What is the first, like... What general direction are you going to go and what
general direction, I think... I think I would want to see just some of, like... I would want to see what some of the old, like, NWA and WCW... like feuds and builds that they had. I think those are the things I'd want to go back to. I can't say first match, but like things on the short list. I want to go revisit the Booker T Benoit feud. Watch some of those matches again.
So what are they going to do with Benoit? They're going to have a disclaimer, right?
Yeah, they're going to have a disclaimer. And I'm glad that I'll get to see those matches.
So you didn't see that 7 match thing?
No, I saw it. I did. I was okay. Watching at the time, but I just remember it was really good. I mean, I think it really elevated Booker, right? And Benoit. I mean, Benoit would look great in it too, but Benoit had a little bit more name as a singles wrestler than Booker did, and I think that really kind of catapulted Booker into a singles wrestler. So I mean, I think I'd want to watch those for sure.
But then you have to watch. The thing is, though, you're going to watch those matches. And then you're going to have to watch Booker raise a roof and have all those southern white guys in the crowd trying to raise a roof and stuff. That's the only downfall for those matches.
It's no
worse. Because you forget him. He used to raise the roof a lot, dude.
Yeah, no, I know. But it's no worse than watching some dork try to, like, do the Big Show, like, hand in the air. which I've seen several times.
Or that dude that your son Logan saw in the... When you took him to the Raw and he's doing the Kofi dance and stuff, right?
I mean, maybe it's just the season. Well, okay, I'd want to go back and watch some old Survivor Series matches, some legitimate 5-on-5 eliminations, and could be the season. But I'd want to go back and watch some of these Rumble matches. I'd want to watch some of these matches. I'd want to watch Shawn Michaels go from number one all the way, because I've never seen that.
I want to see Chris Benoit go. That's the one match I've never seen. That's the one I want to see.
And I'd want to see Rick too.
You've never seen that one, huh?
No,
man. That I have it on DVD. You can watch it.
Okay.
Man. I mean that's a who's who of wrestling right now.
Yeah.
Since you didn't ask me, probably one of the first five that I would watch would be. The I Quit match with The Rock and Mankind. I think that would probably be like one of the first matches I would want to see. The second one would be The Rock and Mankind during the Super Bowl. Just to see flipping The Rock's mic work when it was at its peak, dude. I mean, there's so many things that in my everyday life that I interlace through, dude. Like, the producer will call or whatever, we'll be talking, and then he'll throw out the "it's mild," you know, "it's mild," and he's like, "oh, please." And then, like, with my boy Oz, with him, it's always like, "please, Rock," or "please don't put me in the oven." It's like, "oh," with Mr. Sacco and stuff. And then with you, it's always, of course, like, It's always like, hello, SmackDown Hotel. Mankind can't come to the phone right now. He's too busy having the Rock's foot up his mouth.
If memory serves correct, did you not pin him with a forklift?
He did pin him with a forklift, yeah. And I remember you got pretty mad about that when it happened. But yeah, it would probably be that. And then I think what I would do is I'd probably kind of I look some of the Outsider stuff. You know, just to kind of revisit Scott Hall and Kevin Nash during like kind of pay-per-view matches and stuff, just to kind of see the pageantry that those two guys had. I can't wait to see Scott Hall come out, NWO, and Kevin Nash come walking out, and Scott Hall does his walk that he does, and Kevin Nash turns around and then turns back over and with the Wolfpack sign and stuff. Just kind of seeing those type of things. But and I would kind of want to look at I wouldn't mind seeing some Edge's stuff.
You missed those Edge's.
Right, I would want to get a refresher on Edge as a singles wrestler and see if the guy, you know, was as good as I think he is, which I think he was really good. So those would kind of be, I think, the first couple ones I'd look at.
And thinking about that, too, you know who I might want to go back and watch again, too, was some of the early Kurt Angle stuff. It's like Kurt Angle had some really good feuds, and I don't think in his time I didn't appreciate him because I didn't really get fully behind the character. But him and The Rock had some great matches. Him and Stone Cold had some great matches.
I want to see that Benoit shoot match that they had.
Benoit and Angle, those were all great matches. So, yeah, I'd want to go back and watch some Angle stuff, too.
All right. So, sorry about this show if it was kind of a little bit forced maybe today. But, you know, you're coming over off of the 49ers hangover, and I'm looking for work and this, that, and this, and trying to make all the Carlito Way pieces line up so I can do what I need to do. I had some good conversations today on certain fronts for kind of, you know, end all say all jobs, and you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that. We are probably, I think it's movie scale 61 or 62, maybe it's 63. I don't know what it is. I'll find out soon what it is. We'll come back for you for the Rumble, and we'll get the producer, see if he can come down and have a nice little wrestling party. And I think the older daughter will probably come down our way too. She wants to see the Rumble. I don't know about the youngest one yet. I don't think she can watch 3 hours of wrestling, but the older one, she's on board.
All right.
So are you going to be cooking the whole time like you were last time? I don't want you cooking, dude. I want
Xavier's leaving. His friends are getting it on their own.
Okay.
So he's not even going to be there.
Okay. So you're not going to be like chopping onions and
maybe we should just like order a pizza or something, dude.
You want to order a pizza? Okay.
Maybe it's better that way. You can keep me out of the
kitchen. Hey, the producer's still working full time at our company, so we'll have him buy the food.
Oh, okay.
All right. Cool. You're buying the flipping food and you're buying the beer. Because I can't afford anything anymore. So we'll come back definitely after the Royal Rumble. This is probably the I think out of all pay-per-views, this is the pay-per-view I want to see the most. And I haven't seen the Royal Rumble. I have never seen a Royal Rumble live, ever. I think this will be the first time that I'm going to see a Royal Rumble live. And I'm definitely looking forward to it. I'm about, 25 years in being a wrestling fan and never seen... The only Royal Rumble I've ever seen live was the... hey, Brett, okay, you go over there and I'll go over there. Yeah, and
that wasn't a Royal Rumble.
But it was like a Battle Royale.
It was a Battle Royale.
Yeah, but it was a precursor to the Royal Rumble. And so I think that's the only one that I've ever seen, actually live. And it was on free TV, so...
And no trophy here on this.
No trophy. Yeah, no trophy that's going to be broken over poor Bad News' back and stuff and everything. So
I got some bad news. There's no trophy here.
So we'll check you out after the Royal Rumble. We'll see what's going on, and then we're going to be on the dreaded road to WrestleMania. So I'm kind of preparing myself for that to have like 2-3 months of really bad WWE programming. But you know, as bad as it was after the SummerSlam. You know, the kind of the TV that was there, I felt that WWE's been doing a really good job. A lot of good storylines, and it's easy to bash on WWE and say, like, oh, hey, Ross sucked and stuff, but it's been good. So hopefully the road to the Royal WrestleMania won't be as bad as it was last year, because it was pretty bad last year. So
And if we get the WWE Network, maybe we just come in and talk about NXT all the time.
Talk about NXT? Well, I can't get it because I can't. I gotta pay for a hotspot. I can't afford that streaming.
You come to the house, dude.
Okay. Well, it's hard. I hardly ever
I know.
Get a chance to go over there and stuff. So maybe it's a good thing because I'd be watching wrestling the whole time. So move scale number 62 or 63, whatever it is. 60-some. Better have my angels over here. I'm Bad News Ramos, and we'll check you guys out next week.
To the effect of nothing, effective fronting is what I don't allow, so let me tell you something. I am a bona fide. Not too modest and not a lot of pride. Soon to have a ride and a home to reside. If my mama is sick, I'm by her bedside. Used to watch the show on Channel 4 called Riptide. Wash my wares inside because it's too damn cold outside. That's how the runnings go. If there ain't no dough, then there ain't no show. So take your roly-poly fat promoter to the chemical bank and get my cash. If you want to see the people scream and laugh, you best question ass real fast. Because I don't want to see them start bucking, throwing chairs in the air while you be ducking. What? Don't step to me with that. If you promoting the show, make sure it ain't whack or else I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
I'm leaving.
Let me tell you.
The whack show.
Yo, man, what's up with that? Don't sweat my fat bosses.